Thank you for joining us at the OT Corner with Mrs. K. Please note this podcast does not intend to offer medical advice or therapeutic treatment for any medical condition for either yourself or others. If you have any medical or rehabilitation concerns for yourself or your child, please contact your physician. Now, on with the show. Welcome to the OT Corner with Mrs. K., a school-based occupational therapist bringing you a series of interviews and information on childhood development for kids with all different abilities. So get ready, get set, let's go.
Hey, it's Mrs. K from the OT Corner. Thanks for joining me today. My guest on this episode is Leslie Burke. Now, Leslie and I have known each other for a little over 10 years. Because our girls have been classmates since kindergarten. When my daughter, Raina, was entering into kindergarten, my husband and I decided to move from Philadelphia back to Ohio to look for an excellent education program for her because she was born with a developmental disability and we needed a great special education program for her. Well, she started kindergarten with Genevieve, and Genevieve's parents are Leslie and Bob, and over the years, we have become good friends with Leslie and Bob. Leslie actually was raised on the east side of Cleveland, and she ended up going to Kent State University to study fashion merchandising. Kent State has an excellent program in fashion merchandising, and she had a 20-plus year career in fashion merchandising with two large companies and traveled the world as a buyer. I mean, she's been to Taipei and Hong Kong and Prague and Italy. She has been all over the place. And after, you know, she left her position as a buyer to become more of like a project manager for a company here in Ohio and ended up they started their family. Bob and her started a family. Their older daughter is Isabel. And then a couple years after Isabel was born, came Genevieve. Now, when Genevieve was born, she was born with Down syndrome. And Bob and Leslie did not know this until she was born. So right after Genevieve was born, they were contacted by the Down Syndrome Association of Northeast Ohio, formerly called the Upside of Downs. And Leslie will go into how that name changed over actually this past year that happened. Now, Leslie started out as a volunteer with the Down Syndrome Association of Northeast Ohio, moved into a part-time position fundraising, and she organized two large fundraising events, the Sunburst Gala, as well as the Buddy Walk. And now she is a grant writer for the Down Syndrome Association of Northeast Ohio. She is a wealth of knowledge in this area, and I'm really happy to have her on the show. Without further ado, let's welcome Leslie Burke.
Hi, Leslie. Thanks for coming on to the OT Corner with Mrs. K today. How are you?
Good. Thank you so much for having me, Jennifer.
Leslie, you are from the Upside of Downs. And before we get started in going into like what I wanted to ask you today, I just wanted a little bit of background information, give the audience, you know, how the Upside of Downs started, when did it start, some of the little history facts about the Upside of Downs.
Well, thank you for letting me have that opportunity. And that's the perfect place to start because you've mentioned now that we are the Upside of Downs and we are, and that is how we started. But last year, in anticipation of celebrating our 40th year of being around, we actually changed our name to the Down Syndrome Association of Northeast Ohio. And the reason for the change is we felt that the Upside of Downs really focused on Down syndrome, and that is what we do. But just to be clear with person first language and everything else, we don't ever want someone to refer to someone as a Downs kid or a Downs adult or a Downs student. They are always a kid, an adult, or a student first with Down syndrome. So it made perfect sense for us to make the change to our name. So as you mentioned, what is the history? The organization began in 1982 up in Lake County. There were a few families that lived in the Mentor area of our state, and they wanted to get together to just discuss their experiences of parents of people with Down syndrome and what they were struggling with within the school system. That's how it began. And again, you know, 40 years later, here we are as a still nonprofit 501c3 that actually has a staff of 14. And of those 14, five of our staff are individuals with Down syndrome. So we are very proud to say that we came from a volunteer organization to now actually an employment agency for people with Down syndrome. They not only began in 1982, in 2010 was the first time that a paid staff was hired. There was an executive director hired by the board at the time. And from 2010 until now, we've just added staff as we've needed to. One of the other questions you had asked me leading up to this interview is, are we a national group? Believe it or not, we are not a national group. We are what's referred to as a small local organization, but we are very lucky to reside in the state of Ohio. Our organization serves 16 Northeast Ohio counties, Cuyahoga being the largest and the second largest being Summit, Medina, and Portage combined. But we also work with five other agencies, local little groups just like ours throughout the state of Ohio. So there is an organization in Youngstown, Toledo, Dayton, Columbus, and Cincinnati. And all combined, all six of us make sure that all 88 counties within the state of Ohio have someone they can turn to if they need help with a person with Down syndrome. The other little bit of history about us is even though we've been around for 40 years, we've actually been fundraising for 22. 99% of everything we do is funded by either fundraisers that we hold, our largest being the Buddy Walk, which is in the summer, which is attended by over 5,000 people. Our most intimate is the gala, which is held in the late winter, early spring, and that's held by about 500 people. And really, you know, the largest share of where our money comes from is individual donations from either those fundraisers or from grants that when I get into my history, that's something I work on. But, you know, everything we do is just funded through the kindness of our donors, our sponsors, and the foundations who provide us with funding, foundations who provide us with grant funding.
So are you affiliated, are there any national organizations for people with Down syndrome?
There are. There are actually three, and they're centered all around the country. And Desanio, as well as those other organizations in Ohio, we're all members of these national groups. Each one of them has a different focus. The National Down Syndrome Society is located in DC, and their main mission is to advocate for people with Down syndrome on Capitol Hill. So they were very involved with the Americans for Disabilities Act, getting that passed several years ago. They were very involved with getting the ABLE and STABLE accounts created, which is what was signed into law by President Barack Obama. And that's what they focus on. The National Down Syndrome Congress is located in Atlanta. And they really work for helping any organizations trying to do education and different programming for families. And the third organization is the Global Down Syndrome Foundation. They are located out in Denver, and they really focus on medical research. So they've been very instrumental in working with the community of Alzheimer's to provide research, provide information. One of the challenges of being an adult with Down syndrome in this day and age is each of them are about 50% more likely to form Alzheimer's than a person without Down syndrome. So there's been some wonderful sharing of research and, case history and information regarding people with Down syndrome, because there's a lot of the similarities with those plaques that form on the brain. And so those are what those three organizations do. And as I mentioned, the Down Syndrome Association, we're all members of those three organizations, but they're their national group and we're all our little local groups.
And then when you write these grants, are you writing grants to these organizations or to all different types of organizations that have funding available?
We have actually gotten grant funding from both the Global Down Syndrome Foundation. That is one. We have received grants from National Down Syndrome Congress as well to attend their big conference that they do every year. The National Down Syndrome Society, we don't get support from them on the grants, but they are the trademark holder for the Buddy Walk, which is this huge fundraiser that happens not only in the US, but outside of the US. There are about 250 Buddy Walks held throughout the year. And, you know, we've been doing our Buddy Walk. This was now our 22nd year. So we actually work with them to make sure that some of the funds that are raised from our Buddy Walk go to the advocacy events on Capitol Hill. And then beyond that, there's about 50 different foundations on an annual basis that we apply for funding, and they're very different. For example, we get about $1,000 a year from Hathaway Brown. They have a student ambassador program where the students get together every year and pick local charities that they want to support. That's our smallest grant. And then we get big grants, including $30,000 from the Cleveland Foundation. We also work with the O'Neill Foundation, several foundations that are local here to Ohio. And then, and we are, I'm writing grants in support of three of our major initiatives. So adult employment for people with Down syndrome, medical outreach, which are updating guidelines and making sure that the incredible medical community of Cleveland, Akron, and Northeast Ohio is aware of all that is, you know, necessary and required for people with Down syndrome. And then the third biggest thing that I write for, which I know we're going to get to in a bit, is education, making sure we have the funding that we need to support the education programs that we offer. So, but they're, like I said, the foundations are all over.
All over the place. And I know you personally, and I know that you do a lot of grant writing. How did you get involved with DASANO?
So in 2006, I became a parent of our second daughter, Genevieve, and she was born with Down syndrome. I'm often asked, did we know ahead of time? Were we prepared? And honestly, things have come a long way since 2006. I would say the majority of the families we connect with now actually do get a prenatal diagnosis, but I did not have a prenatal diagnosis for Genevieve. So it turned out when Genevieve was born, at the time, the organization, the Upside Downs, had a phone call, you know, process that they would go through. The hospitals would alert Upside of Downs to any new babies that were born with Down syndrome. And Genevieve was born at Akron General, which is now Asuma Hospital. And so Genevieve was born on a Tuesday at 12:15. And I want to say Wednesday morning at about 10 a.m., our little hospital phone room rang, and it was someone calling from the Upside of Downs, first and foremost, to congratulate us and welcome Genevieve to the community of people with Down syndrome. And from there, I ended up learning that another person involved in the organization was someone that I had met, a friend through a friend, who had a son with Down syndrome, who was a couple years older than Genevieve. And she herself was a volunteer for the group. And she was actually very involved in organizing the Buddy Walk. And she roped me in as a volunteer. So Genevieve was born in 2006, and I joined the Buddy Walk Planning Committee in 2008. I was a volunteer until 2010, when I actually left my full-time career to work as part-time. And I basically, my friend who had been running the Buddy Walk for about 7 years was a little burned out and was hoping one of the volunteers would take over. And that's what I did. So for the first 5 years that I worked for the organization, I planned the Buddy Walk and I planned the gala. But I also worked with all of the sponsors. In the time since I've been there in 2010, we have about 400 different sponsors that support us, not only the Buddy Walk and the gala now, but they also support different programs that we do. They support us in different ways with in-kind support, which is essentially a company helping us out. Maybe they can't write a check, but maybe they can donate water to our buddy walk, or maybe they can donate space on a billboard as you drive into Cleveland. So I did hang on with the events and sponsorship work until 2016. Where I got one of my volunteers to take over the buddy walk and the gala. And I stayed on to work with all of our sponsors and started this new initiative of writing grants, which is something I had never done before. So amazingly, right now, I just anniversaried 12 years of being there. So I'm now in the beginnings of my 13th year, where I will continue to write grants and work with all the sponsors who support our organization year round.
Now, how did you, I'm just curious, did you go to some grant writing workshop or did you?
I certainly did, Jennifer. There's, you know, quite a few organizations, especially in the Cleveland area. Cleveland and Northeast Ohio is actually nationally recognized as one of the most philanthropic parts of the country. Clearly part of that is because, you know, we have so many large companies that are headquartered here. You know, maybe people don't realize that, you know, Nestle is headquartered here. American Greetings is headquartered here. You know, there's lots of big companies and lots of very generous people. So there's a group that I belong to called the Association of Fundraising Professionals of Greater Cleveland. And they, you know, offered some really great webinars in the beginning. I would take, you know, 3 months where I would do grant writing webinars and workshops. And they really did teach me the ropes of how to do grant writing. Also, my boss, who has been a nonprofit her entire career, she, in her previous positions, had written grants as well. So she was able to give me some good tips and tricks as to how to get started. And then we also, there's a couple of different like national database websites that we're members of that allows us to search for grant opportunities. It's very simple. You basically say, okay, I'm looking for funders in the state of Ohio. I'm looking for funders that support education initiatives. I'm looking for funders that are specifically engaged with the community of people with disabilities. So it does really help that there are a lot of great resources out there. As Jennifer mentioned, she does know me personally, and she knows that I'm a very chatty person and I talk a lot and I use a lot of words. And that is a big challenge when you are a grant writer, because everything we do is online and everything has character limits and word limits. And so I do a lot of pre-writing of my grants before I actually write them on the form to try to keep some of those things in check. So
it's good to know that that association is out there. I honestly didn't even know that it was out there. And it's, I think it'd be great to add that in the liner notes of this show so people have access to that resource. So, you know, this season, I'm focusing, this first season of the OT Corner, I'm really focusing in on the 3 to 6 age group, Leslie, just because there's so many. I have a daughter with a disability as well as you do. And there's so many different stages that we go through as parents with kids with disabilities. There's the birth to 3 early intervention. And then there's the preschool years when they're identified with some sort of disability or need in the school system. And I'm just curious what I know that this does so many things for kids of all ages or people of all ages with Down syndrome, but what specifically is out there for those individuals just starting school and going from that early intervention into the school systems?
So we do have a lot of programming. I should mention Gina Michener is our education director, and she is a, you know, previously licensed educator. She was a teacher for many, many years. She joined our board many, many years ago. And really, when we first started offering programming with paid staff, Gina was actually the second person hired. And she has been with us ever since. So she has created something called the Living and Learning Academy as the overall umbrella of all of the education programming that she provides for, again, our parents who receive a prenatal diagnosis, all the way up to our adults, which I believe the oldest adult in our community now is 58. And it is, you know, wonderful that you're focusing on this youngest group now. Jennifer, because even with the folks with Down syndrome, I mean, over the last 30 years, the life expectancy has really changed. You know, back in the 60s and 70s, folks with Down syndrome, their average life expectancy would be, you know, late 20s. Now they're living into their late 60s and even early 70s. So starting with, you know, prenatal diagnosis, early education, early intervention, you know, working with the school systems can make a huge difference in how long our folks live. So under the Living Learning Academy, Gina actually has four programs. She breaks them out by age group. The first program is called Wiggle, Giggle, and Grow, and that is for 18 months to 36 months. Then you can graduate into early learning, which focuses on 3 years and up. Once you've gone into early learning, then there's different phases dependent on where you are in the school system, school year. Then she has Kinder Kickstart, which is 3 years to 6 years. And then she has Lively Learners for 6 years and up. And everything that Gina does, she does have a staff of, again, all licensed educators that are working for our organization. Some of them are trained OTs. Some of them are PT interns. She also has worked with some of her staff have had speech therapy training as well. But everything they do is about movement and engagement and all of what she does. And in fact, I'll provide a link to her pages as well. But everything that she provides is making sure that everything encompasses play. It's all play-based, developmentally appropriate activities to enhance and develop both the cognitive, language, and social emotional development. So she wants to make sure that language, literacy, numeracy, social, emotional, fine motor, and gross motor skills are all combined into one so that it's age appropriate and you're basically learning as you're growing, but what you don't realize is you're sort of playing it the whole time. So again, she tries to break everything down by age, and then a lot of the programming is done on the weekends, and then some of the programming for the younger kiddos would be done during the week, but she tries to make sure that all of it can nicely balance whatever they're doing within the public schools or any private school education at that young age.
And it's nice that I'm an occupational therapist in the school systems, and what parents may not know is that there's a whole guideline. The Ohio Department of Education has a whole guideline, and it encompasses the whole child, and it breaks it down by age group. And it's really nice to hear that what she's doing is encompassing the whole child, the whole person, with her services. And it sounds like a great enrichment program to what's going on in the schools.
And the other thing that she does with the kiddos, with the younger students, especially six and under, there's also training for the parents as well. So the way that our office is organized is there's an area in the back that's sort of our all-purpose area, but then there's also a classroom. And she keeps her class sizes very small. So especially with the younger kiddos, there may be like a one-to-one ratio, meaning, you know, one student and one either volunteer or the teacher itself. And then while that training and education is going on for the students, in our all-purpose area, the parents are being educated as well. So they're being educated on terms like occupational therapy and speech therapy and behavioral therapy, you know, all of these things that as the parent of a person with a disability, there's just a whole education that, you know, they may know nothing about. She also is very helpful in one of the things I didn't mention, as far as parent training, when you become a parent of a person with a disability, as soon as you become part of the public school system, you learn of something called an IEP, which is an individual education plan. And that's a whole nother topic, but Gina's also very helpful in parents understanding that process, understanding what their rights are as a parent, and making sure that it's not quite so scary when the school starts hitting you with all these, you know, computerized forms and all this language regarding your child. She and her team are really there to help any parent navigate that system as well. And that really does start, you know, from the moment that they become connected with our organization.
I think one of the hardest things too about going through the IEP process is they ask you at the beginning of the meetings, what do you see your child doing? What would you like for your child? You know, what's your overall goal? And I think that going to those parent programs, I unfortunately never had that opportunity, kind of had to think about it myself, but does she kind of guide the parents too about like what to think about for their overall goal for their kids in the school systems as well?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. And then these enrichment programs, like the four-part series that she has, the Living and Learning Community, if you're a part of DASANO, do you have to pay a fee or is it all included? Like if you're a part of this, the community, is there any fee for them to pay for these programs?
It depends on what it is that she's doing. Certainly when the students are older, like six and up, a lot of the materials that she creates, they also create a set for the school. So okay. She does actually, you know, charge small fees for parents to attend. I don't think it's ever more than $5 a class. But we also, again, because we have so much wonderful grant support and other things, you know, we would never prohibit a family from attending because of cost. So there are, you know, families of ours who attend on a scholarship basis. We also, you know, again, have had some of these sponsors who actually sponsor our classes, so they're free to everyone. But there is a very minimal cost to attend some of our programming. And then again, some of the programming is free of cost or it is ending up to be sponsored. Or as an organization, we offer any parent twice a year, a parent can come and apply for what's called our family grant programs. Each family, and it is not income-based, which a lot of aid is, ours is not, a family can apply for up to $300 to cover any cost of anything their child might need. It does not need to be an adapted program. It could be the bowling class, or, you know, maybe they like to go bowling once a month. The families could use the money for that. Or they can apply up to $600 for any medical costs. So several of our families do engage in private therapies for their children, and sometimes those aren't covered by medical insurance. So sometimes our families will use that funding to cover the cost for the education programming too. So there are small fees. You know, clearly, I will say from a financial perspective, Gina's programming is probably about a fifth of the cost of everything we do on an annual basis. So a lot of it is covered by us, but and the generosity of donors. But for the most part, it's either very low cost or no cost at all to attend.
And then, Gina goes into the school systems as well. How does she get into the school systems, and what kind of educational programming does she have specific to educators?
So there's a couple different programs that she conducts. Your first question is, how does she get into the school? So it really is just a network of parents and educators and people we've worked with. She has received calls from a school, perhaps in one of the more remote counties that we serve, that is about to welcome their first student with Down syndrome. And they just Googled us, found us, and connected with her. She has gotten calls from a parent themselves who has said, hey, my daughter's teacher was asking about Down syndrome, you know, would you like to talk to them? So she gets either connected from the educators who know about us or find out about us from the parents of the students in their class, or just the parents that Gina has already connected with. And there's a couple of different things that she does. Her most popular class is called DS 101. This is a class that she has performed for, you know, well over, I think, 1,000 students since the time she started. And it's catered for the students of whatever class that student is in. And she varies it based on the age of she knows her audience, who she's dealing with. But she provides a lot of information and just fun information about helping those students and those educators understand what it's like to be a person with Down syndrome. So for example, I know this was pre-COVID, but I know she would do exercises where the kiddos would stuff their mouths with marshmallows to try to stimulate what it's like to be a person with a low muscle tone for their tongue. You know, how hard is it to make the S sound? How hard is it to say CH when your tongue does not have the same muscle tone that maybe all of your kiddos in your class do? I know she has also done some exercises where the kiddos put on oven mitts to experience what it's like to not have all of that strength in your fingers that maybe a person with Down syndrome doesn't have. So there's lots of fun, different things she does with DS-101. And again, she really caters it to the age of the kiddos that she is educating. And then in addition, she has actually gone with parents to IEP meetings, not to be a legal representation or anything scary like that, but just someone to maybe help answer an educator's question, perhaps when they're writing out a goal for a specific need of that student. Maybe there's some language that Gina can help with. Mm-hmm. So she's done that. So she's gone into schools, like I said, for DS-101 or to help with IEPs. And she is also sometimes connected school systems with other specialists that maybe they're looking for some more information for their families. So it's really a very broad scope of what she's done to help school systems. And she has done these classes either for public schools or private. Certainly in the 10 years that I've worked there, you know, we've seen an increase with families wanting to put their people with Down syndrome through the same school system that their other kids attended. And then sometimes that's private parochial education. So she's been really a great resource, again, either her or the staff that she has, helping out some of the parochial schools get a little better understanding of the community of disability.
And it's interesting that you, because when, I have to say, when we started our daughter, Raina, in school, we actually started her in a parochial school. And it is much more, I found it was much more difficult to kind of get yourself wrapped around those services and bring services in. Hence, one of the reasons we went into the public school. So it's great that she's providing, you know, that information to, because I always feel like there's like some sort of barrier between those services and those private schools and those parochial schools. It's just the way they're set up. It's
right. So, it really, you know, I mean, you hit the nail on the head. There is a barrier, but the barrier is just lack of education.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those things that's like, well, quote unquote, it's never been done before. So having a resource like the Down Syndrome Association or the ARC or the county's Board of Developmental Disabilities, I mean, all of those things are great resources for the parochial schools to sort of be able to give that person with a disability the best, you know, the same education as everyone else. And all of those services that I just mentioned with Gina, those are all done free of charge. When we're going out into the community and helping educate, we never charge for any of that. That's always just part of what we do.
That's excellent to know. That's excellent. So what I would love to do is I'm going to include all your in the liner notes here, the website. And if you could include some of those links to some of the living learning community, is that what it's called, living and learning community? It's just a great, I didn't even know that existed. And as an educator myself, as a, you know, a school-based OT, and when, I mean, I do work with kids with Down syndrome, it's nice to know and have that resource available. So I want to include that in the liner notes. And any other contact information that you can provide us, that would be awesome. But I would like to invite you back because I, as I said, as you move through the stages of development with your kid, things get so much more complex and there's so many other facets that seem to develop as the kids get older. So I'd love to have you back if you would so like to come back, that'd be great.
Of course. I would love to come back. Yeah.
Wonderful. Well, thanks so much, Leslie, for coming on today. This is a great episode. I think there's so much information here and there's a lot to unpack. And it's wonderful that DeSano is there for families in this Northeast Ohio community if they have a child with Down syndrome. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to the OT Corner with Mrs. K. Feel free to join the OT Corner community by following us on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. If you have a topic you want to hear about, or if you would like to come on the show, feel free to contact Jennifer at theotcorner.com. We would love to hear from you. All information from the show is listed in the episode notes. We know you can listen to anyone, so we appreciate you stopping by. Until next time, thanks again.